I seriously thought of preaching on the text, "For a full, a terrible end God will make of all the inhabitants of the earth." I thought that would be a nice text in which to sort of go into Thanksgiving with, you know, sort of the last trump. But then the gospel called, that gospel where the gospel of Matthew says the kingdom, or Jesus says the kingdom of heaven will be as when a man going on a journey summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. Then he went away. I did something with my sermon this time, which I don't normally do. I gave it a title: A Tale of Three Churches. A Tale of Three Churches. But let's begin with a parable, the parable of the talents. It's a story about a man who entrusts his property to three slaves while he goes on a long journey. To each slave he gives a sum of money. To one slave he gives five talents, to another two, and to the third one. The parable is unclear about the value of the talent, but the implication is that it is a lot of money, and to each slave is given according to their ability. The master goes away, and on his return he requests an accounting from each slave. The first two have doubled the amount given them, and in return receive the master's reward. The third slave, fearful that he might lose that which was given him, buries the money, hoping to free himself of liability. Alas, more concerned for his own safety, the third slave receives his master's disapproval. He accuses him of being lazy and gives his talent to the first slave. And the story ends in the master saying, "To all those who have, more will be given, whereas those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away." Such is the good news. Whenever the parable of the talents crops up in Bible study, I find invariably it provokes sympathy for the third slave. Most people think he gets a bit of a bad rap for playing it safe. And to some degree, they have a point. Most New Testament scholars agree that the parable of the talents is somewhat problematic. For one thing, it seems to promote the imperial idea that the rich get richer at the expense of the poor, whilst the poor get their just deserts. This is the idea behind the dubious prosperity gospel, a theology much loved by televangelists. But the parable is not meant as a lesson in economics, but rather to remind Christians that they have received God-given gifts according to their abilities. What they make of those gifts is what counts at the end of time. The parable, of course, is an allegory. The master represents Jesus. The slaves are Christians. The talents, the gifts God gives each of us according to our abilities. The return of the master, the second coming of Jesus at the end of time. How one hears a parable has a lot to do with where you are hearing it from. Your own spirituality, your own spiritual life, the context of your being. What came to my mind was that the three slaves in the parable of the talents could be compared to three churches, three different parishes. Which took me back, of course, as it inevitably does, to where I come from.
Most know of the city of York. Some of you may have been there to visit York Minster. Right across from York Minster lies the parish church of St. Michael the Belfry. Founded in the 1500s, the church is famous for being the place where Guy Fawkes was baptized. We all know Guy Fawkes, don't we? Right? Remember, remember, the 5th of November, gunpowder, treason and plot. Well, that's where it all started. Of course, they don't have a sign about that, but, you know. Well, maybe they ought to, you know, they might get some more followers. Well, Renan and I discovered St. Michael the Belfry one Sunday evening while seeking a church to attend evensong. I had declared in my pompous way that I wanted to go to one of the many medieval churches around York. So having tromped the streets in vain, we ended up back at the Minster and we decided that we weren't going to go in there, but we discovered St. Michael the Belfry and she said, why don't we go in there? And I said, what a good idea. And then as we got to the entrance, we realized that this was not going to be any ordinary evensong. For one thing, the place was packed. You know, most evensongs is a service for the faithful, the frozen chosen, the choir, the priest, and the organist, and that's it. Not so St. Michael the Belfry. It was standing room only. And there were guitars and drums. Relen quietly said, are you sure about this? Meaning me, not her. And I said, okay. And so we went in. It was a life-changing moment. No gentle evensong homily, but a vibrant, lively sermon on the gospel to a church that was packed. Later we discovered that the church, Michael the Belfry, was at one point a dying church. And the reason that it was now vibrant is that it had joined forces with another parish called St. Cuthbert's. St. Cuthbert's, at the time, before the conversion of the two churches, was known to have an average attendance of about 12 at each of their services, until a priest called David Watson arrived. When he arrived, he was told the church had 8 months before it would close. Within 8 years, it had burst its bounds and been merged into other churches simply because they needed more room. Every service packed. St. Michael the Belfry has 4 services every Sunday and it is standing room only. Very quickly, the church became the center of the charismatic evangelical renewal movement in the Church of England, and it still is 30-odd years later. Drive 40 miles east of York, and you'll come to my hometown, Hull, where you'll find another Minster church, Holy Trinity. In square footage, it's the largest parish church in England. Dates back to the 1300s. It adjoins the Market Square, and across from the church is the old grammar school that existed in the 16th century. And across from the Market Square, there was, or used to be, the oldest marine naval college, merchant navy college in England. Their boardroom was all Chippendale furniture. They had a big globe standing in the boardroom. It came off one of Drake's ships. The Holy Trinity Church is the place where William Wilberforce was baptized,
the great evangelist, an emancipator. When my eldest sister attended Holy Trinity, the church was in gentle decline. The residences of the wealthy that had existed around the church in the time of Wilberforce had long since gone, replaced by banks and offices and warehouses. But over the past few years, the city centre, like all city centres, has gone through a bit of a revitalisation. People are moving back into the old town. And as if by coincidence, or maybe God's grace, Hull got a new bishop, a woman, Alison White, the second woman bishop to be consecrated in the Church of England, and the first one whose spouse was also a bishop. God alone knows what kind of conversations they had. At her consecration in Holy Trinity, Bishop White threw out a challenge to the good folk of Holy Trinity. Become the main church in Hull, or I will close you. That caught their attention. And the people responded, making the church a venue for performances, exhibitions, and banquets, a place where people in need can find help. Holy Trinity Church has now become the center of the community. So in the last couple of years, the Archbishop of York promoted Holy Trinity Church to minister status. It's now a minister, a title of dignity to recognize the work being done in the name of Christ. Five minutes' walk from Holy Trinity and you will arrive at one of the other old churches of Hull. One of my favourites, actually. My favourite. St. Mary's. St. Mary's, Lowgate. Wilberforce was born in the house right behind it. It's a beautiful church on the outside. And during my first sabbatical, the Casey clan decided to go at Dad's insistence yet again. I want to go to St. Mary's. So we went for their main service one Sunday. It was fairly obvious they weren't used to visitors. They fell on us like honey round a pot. Had we just arrived from another planet? Were we real? The organist was wonderful. Gave us a week's notice of the first hymn. And the service, well, where else do you get the Holy Eucharist to the 1662 Book of Common Prayer? The church had all been done up for the occasion. There was this wonderful side chapel. Medieval churches had these big, enormous side chapels. And this was very handy because that's where the congregation could park their unused folding tables and chairs. I even believe there were a few old bikes leaning against the wall. And if I'm not mistaken, during the sermon, the priest resigned. It was a really uplifting event. They still use the 1662 Book of Common Prayer. The parish continues to this present day to resist all attempts to persuade them to use the new prayer book now in use in the Church of England. The people of St. Michael the Belfry and Holy Trinity could be likened to the first two slaves in the parable of the talents. They responded to the opportunities that were given them. Whereas the congregation of St. Mary's seemed frozen in time, like the third slave, unwilling or fearful of trying to meet the needs of the changing world around them. I use those three parishes in England not just because I know them. They could be any parish in this country. They could be any parish in this diocese. Parishes that I know. And it would have been offensive for me to name them. So I use three parishes I do know in my homeland. In other words, the parable of the talents is concerned not just with the responsible use of our gifts, but the responsible use of our time. As I said at the beginning of this service, next week is the last Sunday at Pentecost. We move into a new church year. The following Sunday is the first Sunday of Advent. We are only weeks away from Christmas, the season of the Incarnation, the season of the now and the not yet, where past, present, and future come together in one cataclysmic event, the birth of the Christ child. The parable of the talents, therefore, serves as a timely reminder to ask ourselves as individuals, to ask ourselves as a community of faith, how we measure up to the talents we have been given. I can't help but wonder what was going on in the community of St. Matthew's time for him to include this parable of Jesus in his gospel. Perhaps he had someone or some community in mind. But for our part, it begs the question, where are we in this parable? Which slave are we in this story? What church are we in my parable of the three churches? And more to the point, how will we respond? How will we use the time granted to us? I began the sermon with a verse from the gospel story. I end it with a prayer from the psalm. Lord, so teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.